J.C. Corcoran Podcast.
Beastly hot day in Gotham City.
Ugh, it is so hot out there.
Why don't we turn the heat down on this pressure cooker?
What are we doing out there, Scully? It's hotter than hell.
I'm afraid you'll find the temperature unpleasant for a short time.
I have an air conditioner in the window of my house. Last summer I turned it around the other way. I turned it up full blast and it got cold out.
Hot town, summer in the city.
Summer breeze.
Golly, I'm hot today.
Don't stand directly under the sun. You got a hat? Use your hat.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest is jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that. It all before. It's like deja vu all over again.
J.C. Corcoran Podcast is rolling for Friday the 23rd of July 2021. Playing Hurt here today. Had another shot yesterday. We were sort of talking about that yesterday. And one of the things that happens when they give you steroids is it messes with your voice. So if my voice doesn't have the usual sound and resonance to it, then that's the culprit right there. Very medieval process. You lay face down. They jam a needle into your spine and then shoot stuff in there that's supposed to make the pain go away. It has produced actually more pain in the short term, and we'll just sort of leave it at that. Well, it was 15 years ago this week that the bus driver for the Dave Matthews Band toggled the switch that opened a tank and sent a torrent of the kind of human waste you can only think about in nightmares. In Chicago, they have the Kinzie Street Bridge. It is one of those bridges that's made of thick steel mesh. So when you're walking across the Kinzie Street Bridge, you're looking down through the holes in the mesh directly into the water. And the guy operating the Dave Matthews tour bus thought this would be an excellent opportunity to jettison from the tour bus the septic tank. What he did not take into consideration is that there are many, many tourist attractions going along the Chicago River right underneath that Kinzie Street Bridge. And so that when he dumped it, it actually came down 800 pounds of it right onto the passengers on the boat below. Prior to that point, the Dave Matthews Band had a sort of a bit of an environmental luster about them. Now, to be fair, there are five buses in the Dave Matthews Band entourage. The one that is the one in question here is the violinist Boyd Tinsley. The irony of this whole story is that one of the ladies who was in the tour boat below and got sprayed with this stuff plays violin for the Chicago Jazz Philharmonic and is the group's principal violinist. So basically, you had one violinist dumping human waste onto another violinist. Initially, the guy denied doing the whole thing, and apparently investigators asked for DNA evidence to find out if it was his poop. And at that point, I guess the guy backed off and realized, yeah, they got me. There's no longer a Dave Matthews Band Ben and Jerry's flavor. And some dedicated historian went to the Kinzie Street Bridge and erected a homemade memorial beside a candle in glass. The poster board sign said, in August of 2004, at this very location, a Dave Matthews Band tour bus dumped 800 pounds of poo on some people. Never forget, hashtag always remember. So as bad a day as you've had any day this week, just remember, it can always be worse. How's that for an opening? Where do we go from there, huh? Scott Spezio is in town over the weekend. You may remember him. Oh my gosh, he had this key triple in the LCS against Milwaukee back in 2006 and had a pretty good year back then. The other thing you'll remember him for is the red soul patch. And he was in town looking not like Scott Spezio. Actually, was in town with his dad, too, Ed Spezio, a great major leaguer. And, yeah, Scott's put on a few pounds. You may recall that right after the Cardinals season, Scott Spezio was drinking heavily and got himself in all sorts of trouble, was hiding in the closet. The wife, who is a former Playboy centerfold, is standing there going, they're knocking on the door. They're looking for you. He goes, I'm hiding in the closet. Tell them I'm not here. She's like, I don't want to get in the middle of all of this. That marriage went away. He, on the other hand, now says he has been sober for 3.5 years and appears to have put all of this behind him. Still has the red soul patch, by the way. The El Monstero concert is tomorrow night. A tremendous performance. The first time I'm going to have to miss it in quite a few years, but we'll see it at Christmas when they come back and do it at the pageant, as they usually do. I'm telling you, between El Monstero, Trixie Delight doing their Heart special shows, and now Jeff Faulkner with his ELO tribute, Mr. Blue Sky. What an area, this part of the country, what an area for tribute bands. You know, I used to think of tribute bands as something that would muck up the lounge at a Holiday Inn, and I resisted going to all of them. And then one day, Steve Littman, who was one of the driving forces behind the scenes at the Fox Theater for many, many years, now he and Greg Haglund are running the boat down in South County, but he said, look, I'm going to give you tickets like 15th row center for this thing. We would love to have you talking about this on the radio, which you can't do if you haven't seen the show. So I'll make you a deal. We'll give you the tickets, we'll sit you down. If you don't like the show, you go ahead, you leave whenever you want, and no bad feelings. Like, fine, I'm going to come to this thing. In this particular case, it was the Australian Pink Floyd. And we sat down. First thing I remember about it is that Mayor Slay was sitting one section over and about 10 rows back from me. And I went up to him before the show started. I go, what, do you know somebody? I'm like in row 15, you're in row 25. That's just not right. You're the freaking mayor. But then the show started, and 30 seconds in, my wife and I looked at each other like, holy shit, what is this? And at the time, the Australian Pink Floyd would have done figure eights around El Monstero, but that all changed, I would say, about maybe 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, when El Monstero now is the definitive Pink Floyd tribute band that could kick anybody's ass in the shows tomorrow night. If you want to see a good show, you go see that. One of the other things is the anniversary of, well, what was originally called the Riverport Amphitheater. Now it's a Hollywood Casino Amphitheater, but you got the anniversary. And I will say this, because there's been no concerts out there, and because of all of the rain and everything like that, you wouldn't believe the grass on the lawn. The grass, I don't think it hasn't looked as good since the opening day 30 years ago. So you have that anniversary this weekend. It was in, I guess it was, yeah, 95. The Moody Blues came in with members of the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra and did that show out there and was absolutely amazing. You know, you're sort of sitting there, it's the mid-90s, and you're saying to yourself, I thought I missed this, you know? I thought I missed having the opportunity to see the Moody Blues with a full 30-piece symphony orchestra. That ship sailed. You know, think of all the people who blew off the last couple of Tom Petty concerts, and now we don't have them anymore. So, I thought my opportunity to see the Moody Blues with the symphony orchestra had passed, and to be sitting there and watching it was just, I mean, I'm not exaggerating, it's one of the great nights of my life, especially if you just take music into consideration. Saw Simon and Garfunkel on this date back in 1983. It was the year before I got to St. Louis. We saw the show at Toronto Olympic Stadium, outdoor venue, and they were great then too. And the movie industry did, for the first time on this date back in 1993, something that heretofore they hadn't done much of. Because what happens is, you know, you have all the crummy movies that come out in like January, and then in February they come out with all the romantic comedies because they know people are going to need dates for Valentine's Day. Then in March and April and the first part of May, it's just a vast wasteland. There's no good movie. That's when you get, like, you know, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot 3, and you get crap like that. Then, of course, coming up to Memorial Day, that's the big Hollywood push. these are movies they don't want you to see. These are movies they want 15-year-old boys to see 30 times. So that's what that's all about. So the movie industry would then do that big push at Memorial Day. And then, frankly, there wouldn't be too much more. Whatever opened in the early summer pretty much ran all summer long, and you didn't really have sort of a flux of new movies until the fall. Well, in 1993, I don't know if this was by design or what happened, but somebody said, what if we make a really, really good movie, an action film, you know, but we throw this thing out there in, you know, like the beginning of August. And so that's what they did with The Fugitive, starring Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones, and it worked. Now, if the movie had been crap, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. But again, somebody said, let's make a really good movie, put it out in August, you know, sort of like, well, here's something new. And people responded to it, and everybody went to see The Fugitive. It was fantastic. And I was in Los Angeles on this date back in 1993, interviewing everybody from that movie. Our visit with Michael J. Fox happened on tomorrow's date, 30 years ago, 1991. He was doing a nationwide stop, something like 22 cities or something like that in 20 days, sometimes hitting two cities in one day. But he was drifting through town to promote the movie Doc Hollywood, which was really good. And some of you will remember we did a whole thing out in the parking lot of the radio station in Creve Coeur. We had gurney races. And we had all these medical people come down in their scrubs, and they brought their gurneys, and we had an obstacle course set up in the parking lot, and we were doing gurney races, and it was really, really cool. I bet you had about maybe 400 people out there, and Michael J. Fox, he got out of the limo. He's like, what the hell is all this? Because we didn't have an opportunity to tell him about it ahead of time. And he was surprisingly reticent about it, and it wasn't until maybe 2 or 3 years later that we found out that it might have only been days prior to his stop in St. Louis that he was diagnosed with Parkinson's. And I'm sure at that time he was pretty freaked out about the situation. And I'm sure maybe even his doctors said, you need to just take it easy here for a while until we figure out what we got on our hands here. But it was a great, great visit with Michael J. Fox. I'm about being driven out of my mind with these COVID stories, especially this stuff coming out of Missouri. Again, the state of Missouri getting all the wrong kind of national publicity, even international publicity. I was watching the BBC News the other night, and they were talking about Springfield. Having to hear this stuff coming out of the state of Missouri every day is just making me sick to my stomach. But you knew the shit was going to hit the fan on this. You could see this coming. NFL players who don't get vaccinated before the upcoming season could cost their teams a lot of money, not to mention a win. The league dropped a new directive yesterday that says if a team can't play a game because of a COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players or staff, they'll take a loss for that game, and the other team will get the win. Not only that, but I wonder what happens if both teams have a COVID outbreak. Then what do they do? Not only that, but the team that had to forfeit will be responsible for any financial losses due to the cancellation, and players on both teams don't get paid. All this goes away if the game can be rescheduled, but it must be within the regular 18-week season. You only have one bye week. The NFL will not add extra time for makeup games. Whether a game can be scheduled will depend on, quote, health and safety reasons at the recommendation of medical experts, as well as consideration of stadium availability, schedule integrity, fan convenience, and other appropriate matters, end quote. And here come the lawsuits in 3, 2, 1. Whether you're interested or not, the Olympic opening ceremony is tonight. And then things really kick in into high gear because here comes that archery and shooting and fencing, cycling, judo, taekwondo, and weightlifting. And Sunday's coverage will also add medaling events for swimming, diving, and skateboarding. Remember there was a time when kids skateboarded to get out of doing sports? Sean Penn doing a series for Starz, but he's reportedly refusing to film until everybody involved is vaccinated. Currently, the production company only requires the cast and everyone who comes in close contact with them to be vaccinated. Second season premiere of Ted Lasso pops up on Apple TV tonight. Late night, Jimmy Fallon's got Matt Damon, Jason Sudeikis, and Camila Cabello, and everything else on late night is preempted for the Olympics. Former President Obama and Bruce Springsteen releasing a book based on their podcast. The director, back to the Olympics. The director of the opening ceremony was just fired because he had a comedy act about 20 years ago and did a Holocaust joke. And somebody pulled that up off the internet, I guess, and they fired him on the spot. So somebody else, with just hours before the ceremony, they got to find somebody else to do it. Bring in Jordan Peele, all right, of Key and Peele, and then make the opening ceremony like a horror movie. He's got a new one coming out, by the way, called Nope, his sequel to Get Out. Season 11 of Curb Your Enthusiasm coming later this year. Paul McCartney gets digitally de-aged for his new video, Find My Way Back. Beck is on that, too. Birthdays today, this will make you feel old. Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, 32. Monica Lewinsky, 48. Alison Krauss is 50. 27 Grammy wins for Alison Krauss. Stephanie Seymour, the Victoria's Secret chick, and she was also in the November Rain GNR Guns N' Roses video. She's 53 today. Slash, 56. Woody Harrelson, 60. Speaking of Doc Hollywood. David Essex, rock on, 74. Edie McClurg, easily one of the funniest people ever to pop up in movies. Ferris Bueller's Day Off, the Hogan family, all that sort of stuff. 76 today. Philip Seymour Hoffman didn't make it. He would have had a birthday today. He died in 2014, and we lost Larry Bud Melman. He would have had a birthday today. He was born in 1921. Birthdays tomorrow, Elizabeth Moss, who I have met and is a pleasure to talk to, 39. Anna Paquin, 39. Rose Byrne, now there's a handsome female, 42. Jennifer Lopez, not doing bad at 52. Barry Bonds, 57. Linda Carter, the original Wonder Woman. MeTV, Saturday evenings, 70. Michael Richards, Kramer on Seinfeld, 72. Robert Hayes from Airplane, 72. Gallagher, Watermelon, smashing superstar, 75. On Sunday, Matt LeBlanc turns 54. Iman, David Bowie's widow, turns 66. The ice cream cone invented in St. Louis at the World's Fair on this date in 1904, 117 years ago. And we've talked about and Amy Winehouse died on this date 10 years ago. She was only 27. And we've talked about this before. This is just one of these weird little things. It was 37 years ago today. The year was 1984. And you remember, Vanessa Williams became the first Miss America to have to give up the title because she had posed for some nude photographs and Penthouse magazine printed them. And what's interesting about that is that maybe you held on to that Penthouse magazine from back in the day in 1984 because you thought it might be a collector's item. Well, believe it or not, it is illegal to own or trade that issue of Playboy magazine unless the centerfold is removed, because that was the one with Tracy Lords as the centerfold, and it turned out she wasn't quite 18. Let's leave it at that. I interviewed her in Baltimore for a John Waters movie. That's quite a difference there, isn't it? The John Waters movie Crybaby with Johnny Depp. And she tried to tell me she had no recollection whatsoever of her years in porn because she was doing drugs and she was drinking. And so the whole thing was a blur and she had like no recollection of it at all, which is what I'm sure some sort of crisis management group told her to tell reporters when they asked about her move from porn to legitimate films. And now this.
But officials are working hard to make sure everyone stays safe and healthy at this year's games. But some people are still unclear about what rules the athletes have to follow in Olympic Village. So here to clear things up is Olympic spokesman Ron Hobbs. Ron, what is the IOC's official policy on getting together and socializing in person?
Jimmy, we'd never tell these world-class competitors what they can or can't do. We're simply discouraging people from engaging in unnecessary physical contact.
Right. Maybe you could clarify unnecessary physical contact?
Simply put, no hanky-panky. No two-person push-ups. Okay. No knocking boots. No boffing, boinking, buttering the biscuits, boom-boom, bouncy-bouncy, or bouncy-ka-wow-wow.
All right. Thank you. Is that why the beds are made of cardboard?
Actually, the beds are just about sustainability and recycling. But if they happen to discourage a game of human Tetris, so be it. Because there should be no grown-up nap time, no baking the potato, no horizontal hula, glazing the donut, greasing the loaf pan, or squat jumping in the cucumber patch.
All right, I feel like you're trying to say something without really saying it, and that's...
Let me rephrase. No tangling the downstairs Christmas lights.
Okay.
No ordering fries animal style from In-N-Out Burger. No making bacon, making whoopee, or making my way downtown, walking fast, space is fast, and I'm homebound.
Yeah, I know. Okay, yeah. Sorry. Maybe you should just tell us the full list of what's not allowed.
Sure thing. No rolling in the hay, no digging of sand crabs, no dipping the candle wick, sweeping the chimney, opening the gates of Mordor, letting the Joker in the Batcave, doing the monster mash, rummaging in the root cellar, searching for pocket chains, shocking the monkey, shrimping the Barbie, shucking the oyster, shellacking the canoe, testing the suspension, battering the corn dog, getting busy, getting down, getting it on, getting some strange, getting some stank on the hang down, doing the nasty, the wild thing, or doing the
That guy was good. That guy was good. All right, we got an anniversary of the opening of what we then called the Riverport Amphitheater. Steve Winwood and the Robert Cray Band. Robert was the opening act for Steve Winwood. We decided to make a pretty big deal out of it because, got to remember, this is 30 years ago. And all of a sudden, you know, shades of the Mississippi River Fest. You're going to be watching rock and roll from outside, a much more controlled environment. And it was exciting, and we made it even more exciting by providing full coverage that night. How about a JCOnTheLine.com acid flashback?
Above the Riverport Amphitheater on opening night. We're going to be here for the 93 minutes to Riverport. Alan Barklage, the greatest American hero, at the controls, along with Libby Cochin, our executive morning show producer, and Lori Light, who is going to be providing Channel 5 news in just a few minutes with a live shot of the traffic situation here.
I'm Executive Vice President Irv Zuckerman, and we're co-owners. Steve and I are co-owners and always have been of Contemporary Productions. Well, obviously, whenever you're putting something together that takes this long, the last minute seems like about a year, but all day today, it's just been going so nicely that I've just been kind of waiting for 8 o'clock. We're ready to play some music, we're ready to party, we're ready to kick Riverport off. And actually, at this point, I'm not only serene, I'm dizzy because I'm following JC in the helicopter and I'm starting to fall over.
Guys, I was just curious as to whether or not you're expecting a huge walk-up tonight.
Well, it's hard to tell, JC, but we've had a good walk-up all day long. We've sold several hundred tickets today, and I'm sure we're going to see a lot of people coming out tonight to buy tickets, and we encourage them to come out. We got plenty of room on the lawn tonight. Tickets are available at the box office. We don't see any major traffic problem at this time, and we encourage people to come on out.
Well, we just, my job is mainly when they come in, make sure our guys are doing what they're supposed to do, and they've got Very Lights in today. It was really special. I mean, those are really nice lights.
Well, what are Very Lights for everybody that doesn't know?
Well, it's the company out of Texas, and they're the lights you see that do anything you want them to do, any color, just about any color. Patterns, they move. I mean, it's amazing what they do. Yeah, they're like the neatest thing ever to come into lighting.
In a little while, we're going to check in with Mark Close down on the ground, who's going to kind of take a look at some of the similar venues around the Midwest. There are many of these outdoor venues spread all over the country. We're going to kind of compare those to what we have out here at Riverport. And also, Mark is going to take a fond look back at the old days of the Mississippi River Festival. Don't forget now, this is a big weekend, not just tonight with Steve Winwood and the Robert Cray Band featuring the Memphis Horns, but tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, Mannheim Steamroller Chip Davis, who was a guest on the Breakfast Club not too long ago, and his 50-piece orchestra, the Fresh Air Concert in the Fresh Air tomorrow night at Riverport, starting at 8 o'clock. As far as Steve Winwood is concerned tonight, we expect him to start with I'm a Man. Later on, you'll hear songs like While You See a Chance, the Low Spark of High Heeled Boys, and won't that be exciting to hear a live version of that? Also, Medicated Goo, Feeling All Right, Roll With It, Higher Love, and Gimme Some Lovin', all of those on the playlist for Steve Winwood tonight out here at Riverport. We'll check in live.
They've opened the gates just
there
now.
There they go. 6:41 on Friday, June 14th, out here at the Riverport Amphitheater. They open the gates, and in they go.
We're talking to the very first people through the gates of the Riverport Amphitheater, and this is Chris and Wendy Black. Chris, where are you from? What do you do?
From St. Charles. We own Café Beignet.
We just wanted to get the best seat on the lawn.
That's wow. True. And now I got you over here, and it's going to...
I can't believe it.
And now it's going to fill up, and you're going to get the worst seat.
When you come to the pavilion here at Riverport, you may see some of those private boxes down close to the stage. Those will be served by waitresses, similar to the way the private boxes work at the arena and also Busch Stadium. However, Steve Shankman from Contemporary Productions told me yesterday that with about 48 hours notice, they can have any kind of food you want ready for you and your guests in these boxes. See if you can stump them, but you got to get your hands on one of the boxes first. Some of the inhabitants of those private boxes include Channel 5 and Channel 30, Anheuser-Busch, Pepsi, a law firm or two.
We welcome to the Breakfast Club Sunil Sinha, who is production manager out of Riverport. Welcome.
Thank you. Wonderful night. Terrific night.
You would think that this absolutely would be the state-of-the-art place.
It is. What they've done is they've corrected everything that was a mistake or something that was not fully done in all the other facilities. And with the architect, design architect, who's been involved, I think, 5 or 7 of these, they corrected all these things that they wanted to. And this is incredible. Wonderful.
Now, what about the artist's reaction to some of this? Winwood, I talked to his manager a little while ago. He was flying a kite. Yeah. And
They loved it. They came in here and they said, this is great. This is incredible. For production, it's wonderful. Easy.
J.C. Corcoran, sending it downstairs to Mark Close.
Thanks, J.C. Appreciate it. Here with the opening of the Riverport, a lot of comparison going on with some of the other amphitheaters throughout the country. In mine, Pine Knob up in Detroit, Michigan, holds about 14,000 people outside of Chicago's Poplar Creek at 22.5. And then outside of Cleveland, Ohio's the Blossom Music Center at about 18,000 people. But I guess if you're going to do a comparison, everybody in the St. Louis area always goes back kind of to the granddaddy of them all. And that would have to be the Mississippi River Festival. And some great memories from those days. And that was kind of B.C. That was before Corcoran, if you can imagine that. The first concert happened way back in June 20th, 1969, and that was the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. The first kind of rock or folk show happened with Buffy St. Marie June 23rd. Again, that was 1969, and whatever it went through on trivia a little bit earlier today, the reason that MRF came about was a summer home for the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra, and for the first summer, they played 18 performances there, and about 12 of the contemporary acts came about afterwards. So again, the start was June 20th, 1969, with the St. Louis Symphony Orchestra. Buffy St. Marie was the first pop/folk performer on June 23rd from 1969. The last performance happened on August 23rd of 1980, and that was ZZ Top. I got a lot of this information from the director of MRF, the Mississippi River Festival, a gentleman by the name of Lyle Ward from 1970 through 79. You'll probably remember back, we were talking about this this week on trivia. The largest attendance ever at MRF was for The Who, 1971. 33,000 people showed up for that show. Wishbone Ash was the opening act. There were shows interrupted due to the weather. In fact, in 1970, some tornado winds blew in, snapped some poles on the tent. Nobody was hurt. Waited a few minutes, and the show went on. To give you an idea of the times and going back to 1969, ticket prices at the Mississippi River Festival, and you're going to love this, the reserve seats under the tent were $6.50, and the lawn seats were $2. Of course, back then you could get gas at 19 cents a gallon, too. Some of the acts that performed throughout the years at the Mississippi River Festival, Iron Butterfly, Janis Joplin, Arlo Guthrie, Richie Havens, The Grateful Dead, Chicago, The Guess Who, Ike and Tina Turner, Chuck Berry, David Cassidy, one of my favorites, Blood, Sweat, and Tears, and the year that Harry Chapin came in late. He missed his flight out of New York, took a private jet in, went to the airport, called up a guy by the name of Alan Barklage, who flew him in to the Mississippi River Festival. I'm sure Alan remembers that. And did you stay for the show, Alan, or did you just you flew back?
I just flew back.
Okay, good for you.
Didn't stay for the show. Are you kidding? It was so hard to find a place to land out there. You know, they set it up. They said, okay, they'll have some players where they want me to land. Well, that got out to the audience, and everybody out there had some kind of a fire burning. I had no idea where to land this guy.
They were barbecuing, Alan. They were all having their cue pits going, and it got pretty intense. But that was some of the great shows that went about in there. And again, it kind of came to an end in 1980. But SIU folks ran it from 69 through 77 with some incredible shows and some great memories over the Mississippi River Festival at SIU. And we've got opening night here at Riverport. I'm sure many great memories to come in the very near future. It's Mark Close reporting live from Riverport.
A couple of facts and figures to throw at you. Riverport is a $15 million concert facility on approximately 500 acres of land here in Maryland Heights. The stage and pavilion area cover about 50,000 square feet of open area, unobstructed by any columns. There is nothing to get in your way. The stage and the pavilion structure were made of recycled steel here in 1991. That's of interest to a lot of people. And the roof structure is designed to support about 75,000 pounds of lighting, sound equipment, etc. The general contractor, Sphere Building Corporation, and Ben-Hur Construction both did a great job. Thanks to Kevin Bloom with the Nucor Building Systems for the stats. There are about 7,000 pavilion seats. Those were sold a long time ago. Another 13,000 lawn seats are filling up as we speak. Opening night at Riverport, Robert Cray and Steve Winwood, of course, Mannheim Steamroller with their 50-piece orchestra out here at 8 o'clock tomorrow night. That about does it from the helicopter. We will see you on the ground. Again, congratulations to Irv Zuckerman and Steve Shankman.
The A-List Interview with JC and the Morning Show Graham.
People will always have sort of a warm place in their hearts for Steve Winwood because you were the very first act to open up our big outdoor concert venue, the Riverport Amphitheater. Robert Cray was the opening act. Do you have any recollection of that night here in St. Louis?
Oh, I do, yes. Yes, that's right. It was a big amphitheater. What's the name of the amphitheater again?
Well, at the time, it was called the Riverport Amphitheater. It's been renamed since that time.
It's been renamed already.
Yeah. Yes, yes. But did that produce any sort of oddity for you? I mean, given the fact that they're expecting you to walk out on stage in a place that had never, ever been performed in before?
Well, I just hope that the people have done their homework. I'm sure there's very many able, clever people had worked on the sound and the audio side.
JC and the Morning Show, Graham.
It was a long time ago, and they are celebrating out in Maryland Heights all weekend long. And, of course, the El Monstero Show tomorrow night, and we are excited for all of our concert friends out there. You make friends over the years because you spend so much time working with people at a concert venue because you're out there all the time. You get to know everybody. We have many, many friends who have been in dire straits for the last year and a half because there were no concerts out there, and it's just so, so gratifying to see them all going back to work. We wish all of you the best, and especially our buddy John Canavera, used to be one of our producers on the show, one of the big executives out there, and having a big birthday, by the way, coming up next week. So we say happy birthday in advance to our pal John. All right, look, have a great weekend. All of our podcasts are posted on Apple, along with multiple other platforms. Just punch around, you'll find it. Or, of course, right here at jcontheline.com. And the shows are archived, so if you miss anything, you can go back and listen to it. Have a sensational weekend. We'll be back bright and early Monday morning at 7. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one.
See you later. Bye. The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.